Okay, terrific. So can you all hear me okay there in the back? Great. So Bill is truly a remarkable person and a very incisive thinker, and I regret that you're not going to get to hear from him directly today. His email will be at the end of this presentation, however, and I'm sure that he would be delighted to hear from any of you who have comments on this presentation or would like to enter into a discussion with him about some of his ideas. The presentation is really the result of thinking that Bill's been doing over a number of years, as well as research that the Healthy Aging Research Network has been engaged in. He has no relationships or potential conflicts of interest to disclose. So basically, as Linda indicated, we're going to be focusing today on environmental issues in healthy aging and what we might be able to do in terms of policy or practice changes that might provide greater support to healthy aging. So in Bill's presentation, we're going to focus on some of the rationale and evidence for systems change. And in particular, we're going to be looking at physical activity, specifically walking, and what environmental factors are particularly relevant to walking in older adults, which we know, of course, is very important from an individual health and a public health perspective. We're going to be distinguishing between environmental modifications and environmental adaptations. I'll just leave that to your imagination for the moment. And then we're going to talk about future directions for a comprehensive set of environmental programs and policies. So, what is healthy aging? Pretty fundamental question. The CDC Healthy Aging Research Network spent a good bit of time in its inception over a decade ago to focus on this issue. And this is the definition that our team arrived at. Basically, that healthy aging is the development and maintenance of optimal physical, mental, and social well-being and function in older adults. So that "and function," I think, is particularly important because we're accustomed to thinking about health as freedom from disease, so to speak. But we know for older adults, and for that matter for all of us, that function is incredibly important, being able to do what we want to do, being able to get where we want to go, that sort of thing. What I think distinguishes the Healthy Aging Research Network's definition of healthy aging is that it emphasizes the environmental component. It's saying that healthy aging is most likely to be achieved when physical environments and communities are, number one, safe, and number two, where they support adoption and maintenance of attitudes and behaviors known to promote health and well-being. Okay, so in this presentation, we're going to focus on walking and environmental factors that affect walking, and we're going to be in particular looking at issues of built environment. We could just as easily be talking about the natural environment or the cultural environment because clearly they are also relevant to healthy aging. But with regard to walking, there are a number of excellent reviews that kind of pull together research by a number of investigators. One I would recommend to you in particular is the recent review by Yen, Michael, and Perdue. It's really an excellent summary of the research in this area. Among the factors, though, that have been proven to be important in this largely cross-sectional research are land use patterns, and that is to say that older residents of mixed-use communities are more likely to walk than those who live in single-use residential areas, read suburbia, okay? Destinations are also clearly important. Older adults who live in close proximity to particular destinations are more likely to walk. Those might be grocery stores, parks, trails, post offices, places where you need to go to take care of your daily business or to participate in leisure time activity. Housing and population density are also important. The availability of desirable destinations. Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed that. I lost my place here. Housing and population density are also important. So older adults living in areas where there's higher density, that is to say a grid-like street pattern and shorter block length, are more likely to walk than older adults living in lower density areas with more of a serpentine, curvy street pattern. And again, you know, we're talking largely about suburbia there. Perceived safety is also incredibly important. It greatly influences walking behavior, whether it's reality-based or not. Older adults tend to feel vulnerable and be fearful of crime, fearful of falling, or fearful of being struck by a motor vehicle. And unfortunately, most of these concerns do have a firm basis in reality, with older adults being much more at risk than their younger counterparts in all of these areas. All right, so where are we? So I think Bill's perception is that we have a pretty impressive research base to date, largely cross-sectional, that is quite compelling, but at the same time not definitive. And by that, he's particularly underscores the fact that there are very few longitudinal studies that might inform us. There is virtually no research where we look at behavior change as a consequence of changes in the environment. That's an area where we really need to go. Another significant limitation has to do with regional and population diversity in the research that's been done. Most of the studies that we've made reference to here were based in highly urban areas. There is very little research that's been done in rural areas. We know next to nothing about Frontier Colorado, for example, or even small town North Carolina. There's also work to be done in terms of discriminating between choices that people make for walking based on leisure or destination walking, which tend to be quite different and, again, may differ by urban-rural residents. But despite these limitations, the evidence linking older adult walking and environmental factors is strong. Strong enough to warrant a programmatic and policy response. So we have a variety of organizations and agencies that have stepped forward and advocated policies in this area. The World Health Organization's Age-Friendly Cities Initiative, the CDC, the EPA's Building Healthy Communities for Active Aging Initiative, all of these are important policy. All of these organizations have important policy and programmatic responses in this area. So, Bill asks if these recommendations are justified. Should we be going down this path? And surely there is consistent evidence from the cross-sectional studies. The calls for improvement of aesthetic and utilitarian features of the built environment make sense. They have face validity. They do no apparent harm. And the calls for walkability and mobility has potential then to improve the community at large. So we like to say that, you know, what's good for an older adult is also good for the young mother with a stroller. So, what do we need to do to make this evidence even more compelling and to translate available research into practice and policy? Well, we need to look more carefully at the evidence that is available and use it to refine program and policy. So, for example, we know that access to restrooms is very important to older adult walkers. But I have yet to see a public health campaign that's focused on access to restrooms. Okay? Maybe we need that. Everybody's laughing, but maybe we need that. We also need to expand the range of environmental programs and policies. And this is Bill's concept of environmental modification versus environmental adaptation. I'll talk a little bit about that. So, environmental modification, as you might imagine then, are actual structural changes, policies and practices that result in actual structural changes. So these can vary greatly in scope. So you could have increasing length of signal time for pedestrian crossings in municipalities, using sidewalk improvement dollars to repair sidewalks, perhaps emphasizing areas where you have a high preponderance of older adult residents, increasing the illumination level of streetlights. And then you have, you know, more macro kinds of approaches like infill development, transit-oriented development, zoning changes toward mixed use. Or like some communities, very few are beginning to do, is having a provision whereby all policies really need to consider the needs of older adults and also those who have some functional impairments. All right, so environmental modification, it makes sense, it has face validity. If we remove environmental barriers and other stressors, we should theoretically then be able to enhance mobility. It's also quite feasible. There are a number of organizations and movements such as Smart Growth, Complete Streets, municipal governments, with whom we could potentially form alliances and move this work forward. Bill notes that depending on the size of the modification, it could be challenging to conduct conduct longitudinal studies. At the same time, all across the country, we have a number of natural experiments that are happening. So for those of us who are involved in research, why not find a way to study those and look at whether there is behavior change that results from these changes in the environment? All right, so moving on to environmental adaptation. So unlike environmental modification, which is a more universal approach, if you will, environmental adaptation is a more individually oriented intervention that does not require changing the environment. It's more of a workaround, if you will. So it would entail then linking or matching older adults to the best that their environments have to offer. So, for example, plotting out safe routes and creating maps that would direct older adults to the safest places to walk in their communities. Like environmental modification, it has face validity. It makes sense. You provide a safe and effective program that enables older adults to adapt to existing barriers and stressors. It's also quite feasible. There is evidence that older adults can make use of safe environmental audits to help identify routes that are safe and convenient for them, recognizing that the older adult population is very heterogeneous, and you know what might be an acceptable route for me might be very different for someone who's quite frail and uses a walker. There's also, I think, with environmental adaptation, a lot of potential for alliance with other groups. So, for example, would local businesses support mapping, as they actually have in some communities, because it's a way to drive people to their businesses as well as support walking, which has a health benefit for the community at large. Environmental implementation is efficient. Its implementation may require less time and be less costly than other possibilities, specifically environmental modification. From a research perspective, then, it could also be effective in the sense that you have smaller scale public health or clinical interventions that could be assessed more readily, perhaps, than community-level change, certainly lends itself to community-based trials, to looking at specific populations, newly diagnosed diabetics, cancer survivors, people who are being discharged from the hospital and told to embark on a program of physical activity. And perhaps most importantly, from a researcher's perspective, and for those who are interested in changes in the built environment, it can help strengthen the evidence base for environmental modifications. So, Bill's takeaway on this is that clearly the current research, practice, and policy in this area is compelling. But a new generation of work is really required, and this is kind of a action steps recommended for those of you who are in this room. So thinking very carefully about what existing research, what the existing evidence tells us about what we should be doing in the programs that we're crafting and the policies that we're developing. So it matters not if we know that benches and places to rest are important to older adults, if we don't take that research finding and translate it into practice in the work that we're doing. We clearly need to expand, create opportunities for longitudinal studies and to look specifically at behavior change that results or perhaps does not result from environmental change. We clearly need studies that expand beyond very dense urban communities and look more at rural and other non-metropolitan communities, as well as look at specialized populations, so perhaps reservation dwellers, that sort of thing. Finally, we need to expand programs and policies to include both environmental modification and environmental adaptation. So here's Bill's email. I hope you will jot it down and let him hear from you if you would like to comment on the thoughts and conclusions in this presentation. The slides are available through the conference, and you'll be able to access them there. And I think he's given us all some good things to think about and to launch this symposium.